Okay, we have four goals set out for today. So first of all, to try to finish some of the lumdas from yesterday in terms of particularly understanding Shittas HaRambam. Then I want to just put a little bit of a spin on Halach Lamaisa about how of course, so much of the lumdas we've been talking about impacts on abortion and some other quasi-abortion-related issues. Then I want to see if hopefully we'll have enough time to start the next sugya, and then a little bit of time for Chumash. So I have no idea what any of those four goals are going to be accomplished, but at least we'll set our hopes high and see how far we get today. So, in a sense, the real last akud of the sugya is, as everybody realizes for the last 3 days, is obviously the most complex part, the most difficult part, and that is trying to get some kind of a handle on the Rambam. But the Rambam, of course, tells us that, is there a din of rodef by an ubar? Is there a din of rodef in general when a woman's having difficulty giving birth? So the answer is, sometimes yes, sometimes no. So Kozman, the baby's not born, so then we apply the rule of Rodef, and somehow once the baby is born, so all bets are off, Rodef doesn't apply, and then Eindoch and Nefesh, Rebbe Nefesh kicks in. Of course, very, very difficult to understand. Rashi's Pshan, the Gemara was so much easier, that there's no din of Rodef at all, Mishmaik and Radfilei, and the only reason why there's a difference between pre-birth, post-birth, is because one's a Nefesh, one's not a Nefesh. But the Rambam Sheet, of course, is very, very difficult. So I guess even Mitchila, we have to, in a certain sense, we might say Maldoa and ask Mechila for Reb Chaim, that we're not going to be able to do justice to Reb Chaim for a simple reason that I just don't understand it. I spent a lot of time, and a lot of people spent a lot of time trying to be mocked it properly. And it's hard for me to explain it properly. I don't understand it myself properly. So I'll try just to really, really give what the Tamtzis Advarim, Tipim and Ayam, in terms of what I think Reb Chaim is saying, at least for our part, B'das Rambam. And we're going to focus really on the last paragraph of Reb Chaim. The first parts of Reb Chaim are also very, very fascinating, very difficult to understand. But I think the part that's most relevant for us is really that last paragraph. So we'll try to say it over a little bit. So basically, Reb Chaim develops this idea that there are really two different components of a rodef. There is, first and foremost, atzolos hanirdof. Now, this is something that we're already familiar with from previous sugyas. So we shouldn't, machavech, we shouldn't ignore the aspect of atzolos hanirdof. And Reb Chaim highlights the din that probably more than anything else, sensitizes us to this idea of atzolos hanirdof, to the brayse that appears a little bit later on in the Gemara, where the Gemara talks about, if it's efshel atzil b'yachamei varav, that if you're able to save the nirdof in another way without taking the life of the rodef, so you better do that. And you're chayav to do that. And if you don't do that, it becomes a serious question. You may be chayav misa for that. Whether Beis Din is going to put you to death for that is another story, but the fact that if we have other options to save the nirdof, that is definitely something that we have to reckon with. That seems to indicate that a significant part of rodef is in fact the atzolos hanirdof. However, that's not all. That's not the entire picture. Now, we're also familiar with that idea. We've already seen that idea. We saw that in other terminology of onesh and things like that we spoke about in the past. So Reb Chaim also concedes that there is a second din of rodef in addition to the hatzolos hanirdof. And this is where it starts to get a little bit gray. That the second din of rodef declares the gavra to be a chiyav rodef, a din rodef, I'm not sure what to call it anymore. It's a chiyav rodef, a special din that kicks in on the rodef himself. So, in a certain sense, there's dinei rodef mitzad hanirdof, and there's dinei rodef mitzad harodef. And the starting point of all halacha would be is that ein doch nefesh v'pnei nefesh. That's our baseline. Ein doch nefesh v'pnei nefesh. What enables us to overcome ein doch nefesh v'pnei nefesh is the fact that the gavra harodef is called the gavra harodef. And Nichol, that title that we put that label on his head called You Are Rodef, not just that we're interested in saving the nirdof, but You Are Rodef, that is what ultimately enables us to override the din of Ein Doch HaNefesh. So comes Reb Chaim and says, when our Gemara says, Mishmaya Karad Filei, that what's taking place over here is really a Kodesh Baruch, is really a Shemayim, it's a natural order of things that's causing this quote-unquote Redifa to take place. What that means is as follows. Mishmaya Karad Filei is a Hafkah in the din rodef mitzad rodef. That means you can no longer label this fellow as a rodef mitam atzma. He is not chal on a mishem rodef because in the end he's not doing the redifa. There are other sources of redifa taking place. Is there a redifa taking place? Yes, but it's not me. I'm not the rodef, or at least I'm not the rodef in terms of labeling me as a din rodef, a chiyav rodef, in order to be mafkia for me the din of ein doch nefesh from ein nefesh. Since that is the case, that's exactly what the Gemara means when it says that once it's Hotzi, Rosho, Yatza Ruba, whatever the Shia of Leida and Asug is, once that baby is born, so we want to know, we have a very real issue of Deicha Rebnei Nefesh. Do we have a right to be Deicha one Nefesh for another Nefesh? And the answer is unequivocally no, because even though there is a Din Rodef taking place, you can't deny it, that Ruben is being Rodef Shimon, you can't deny that someone is being Rodef somebody, but since Mishmai Karad Filei, that since that Radifa is labeled as Radifa Min HaShemayim, that prevents us from kicking in that additional halacha of Deicha Nefesh Rebnei Nefesh. That prevents us from overriding in Deicha Nefesh Rebnei Nefesh. And therefore, our hands are tied. And Kol Zman, that we can't overcome the concern of Ein Deicha Nefesh Rebnei Nefesh, we cannot kill anybody. And that's exactly why we just throw our hands away and walk away. And Kachi Tivu Shalom, that's the way it is. That's Mishmak Rat Filei. Nothing else we can do about it. But, says Reb Chaim, Kol Zman, that the baby is not yet born, so we are not at all saying that this is not Ritzicha. It is Ritzicha. If it wasn't Ritzicha, if Rashi was right and said that it wasn't Ritzicha, then I don't need a Parshas Reidev to kick in here. So for the fact that the Rambam says, Lefikicham Chacham, because there's a din of Reidev, therefore the din is that you take the life of the baby, says Reb Chaim, it's Reidev, right? There's a Parshas Reidev, but there's Taka, still a concern of Ein Deicha Nefesh Rebnei Nefesh, because Mishmai Karat Filei. So the din rodef, the chi of rodef on the rodef per se, is not going to remove the Ein Deicha Nefesh Rebnei Nefesh. So if it's not going to remove the Ein Deicha Nefesh Rebnei Nefesh, I have one of two conclusions. Either say, Taka Ein Deicha Nefesh Rebnei Nefesh, or maybe we can come up with some other reason, something else that could overcome Ein Deicha Nefesh Rebnei Nefesh. Now, we never heard of that. Normally, the baseline, the starting point is Ein Deicha Nefesh Rebnei Nefesh. Unless we have reason to believe that there's something that can overturn that statement. What can overturn that statement? So Reb Chaim says it in one word. He says that, well, clearly the nefashos here are not on equal footing. There is no question that the nefashos are not on equal footing. Haraya, if you kill an uber, you're a ritzeach, you're a violation of lo sirtzach. We throw the book at you, but we don't kill you. You're not chayim mitzvah beis din. If you're a goy, you're chayim mitzvah beis din. If you're a Jew, you're not chayim mitzvah beis din. So if you're not chayim mitzvah beis din, that indicates that the degree of nefesh of an ubar is not the same as a regular person. There's no two ways about it. There clearly is a difference in the nefesh abay, because one kind of a ritzichas nefesh carries with it einish mitzvah beis din, and the other doesn't. So now, when we're simply posketing a shayla of ein deicha nefesh rebnei nefesh, that's the only issue we have to posket here. We don't have to worry about anything else. We don't have to worry about, is it Ritzicha Yahar Val Yava? No, we don't have to discuss. We have Rodef here. So Rodef lets us do certain things here. All we have to focus on is this an application of that principle of Ein Deicha Rebnei Nefesh or not? And the answer is, by an Uber, the answer is no. Notwithstanding the fact that it's Ritzicha to kill an Uber, but Ein Deicha Rebnei Nefesh doesn't have to be put into place. And since there's no concern of Ein Deicha Nefesh Rebnei Nefesh, therefore we are allowed to, in a sense, follow the regular rules of Rodef. And the regular rules of Rodef let us do acts of Ritzicha. You're allowed to do Ritzicha, Laman Rodef. You can't be a Deicha Nefesh Rebnei Nefesh, but that we already took care of, that we're already not concerned with. So therefore, the discrepancy, the distinction between pre-birth and post-birth is that both of them are Rodefim. In neither of them is the Gavra called the Reidev. In neither of them do we have a right to apply in Deicha Nefesh Rebnei Nefesh. But, Kol Zman, the baby's not born, we have other ways to remove the Ein Deicha Nefesh Rebnei Nefesh concern. Again, Lefinia's Daiti, again, I didn't do justice to it. Lefinia's Daiti, that's the Tamtus HaDvarim that I think gives some kind of a beer to what Reb Chaim is driving at. I'm probably expecting 12 hands up on this one. Yeah.
What's the chilek between the Deicha and
I don't know. I think that's why I kind of substituted the terms Rodef Mitzad HaNirdef, Rodef Mitzad HaRodef. That means you could have there could be a status of Radifa taking place, even though you as a Gav are one called a Rodef. I think that's what Reb Chaim is saying.
Do those line up into two mitzvahs, or is that not?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't know how the mitzvahs fit into the picture. I'm not sure. I don't know.
Really?
Yeah.
Just like a technical question, in the beginning of the Reb Chaim, we quoted that Yachal Hatzil, the Echad Me'ivara, was a raya that there's a din near, that there's a bit of a toss and you're not.
Right.
How is that a right? I would think if anything, it should be the opposite, because isn't that a din on the loading?
No, well, it's Efshel Atzilo. If Efshel Atzilo means that our goal is to save the person. So if I can save the near duff by simply shooting the roller from the leg, I'm supposed to do that. So see, that shows that my goal is to be that Solomon. My goal is really, I'm focusing on getting that near duff safe. So if there's another way to get the near duff safe, I have no justification to kill the roller. So there is another beer that is given in the Shittas Rambam. It is the beer that is suggested by Ramosha. I don't know whether anyone had a chance to read this Ramosha inside. Anyone find it inside? I don't know. It's reprinted in Ingress Ramosha. I think it was originally printed in other places. Anyway, I'll say it also again. It's a long... The way it's printed in Ingress Ramosha is very long. I don't remember anymore. Yeah. It's fairly long. I'm going to try to say it over again. The way the Tamtas Advarim, I think that Ramosha is trying to drive at is as follows. So Ramosha begins, or at least for our purposes, begins by focusing on this idea of Mishmaya Korat Filei. That's the phrase that the Gemara uses, Mishmaya Korat Filei. So the Rambam, when he quotes that idea, Mishmaya Korat Filei, he throws in another word, Zel Tivashal Olam. This is the natural course of events. The Rishalmi, when it speaks about the same topic, it uses a little bit of a different phrase. Eini Edeya Mi Reidef Es Mi. You can't tell who is being Rodefu. So Ramesha basically says, I think what Ramesha is driving at is that all three of these concepts are really basically describing the same thing. And the Rishami is really concretizing it by saying that in a classic Redef, there was a very clear Rodef and a very clear Nirdef. There is, unfortunately, sometimes we live in a world where sometimes there's confusion between who's the aggressor and who's the victim. But in the world of Halacha, it's very clear who the aggressor and who's the victim. The guy who's running, holding the knife, is the aggressor. The guy who's on the floor trying to protect himself is the nirdaf. But sometimes it's not so clear. Sometimes you have a situation that arises where any of them be ready if it's me, means they're both being ready for each other. There's a fight. The two guys who are fighting, they're wrestling on the ground. There is no clear ready if and near if. They're both being ready for each other. A fight just spontaneously broke out. So any of them be ready if it's me. Lahavdil, Elif, Halofim. Maybe some of the hockey fans can fill me in. You know what? Is it always clear who started the fight? It's not the question, right? Is there a difference in penalty between the aggressor and the aggressee? Say, what? They're both 5 minutes in. What? They're both 5 minutes in a penalty box. Okay, good. So any of them, me right there is me. You can't always tell who's the attacker, who's the attackee. So says the Rambam, when you have a situation that arises of any idea, me right there is me. Zel tivishal olam. So then the whole parsha of Rodif doesn't apply. And what do? You sit back and you let nature, quote unquote, whatever happens, happens. Let nature play itself out because I can't intervene. Who am I going to intervene? To kill who? So any of them either is me. I have no right to intervene. So whatever happens in the course of the natural world is going to happen. And that's what the Rambam meant when he says that Mishayotza Rosh, Mishayotza Rub, whatever it is, whatever the halachic later takes place. So then what do you do? So then you just have to leave it. And Zel Tivishal Olam. And therefore, there's no din of Rodef. There's no din of Rodef. Ein Dech and Evshim Bring Nefesh. And finish. I can't budge. But Kol's mouth that the baby hasn't been born. So then we can assess Mi Rodef is Mi. Then there is a way of saying Mi Rodef is Mi. I think, and again, you can correct me. I haven't seen this honestly, I didn't see the Tshuva Ramosha again this time around. So if I'm quoting this incorrectly, please correct me. But I think what Ramosha was driving at is that Kolzman, the baby wasn't born, it's clear who's the aggressor. It's clear who's the attacker. That the baby needs the mother. The mother doesn't need the baby. So the baby is considered to be the Reid of Esa Aim. The aim is not the Reid of Esa Vlad. And if that's the case, that the baby is the clear-cut aggressor, he's the clear-cut Reid. Again, if that's what Ramosha is saying, if that's the Kavan of Ramosha, so then... Then I understand why regular didn't roll they kick it. Yeah.
The way Ramosha said it doesn't after come on the book term becomes Shekhayakun into Khayab, you did that in Mishnah.
The what the
Shekhayakun of Khayab. The mother's life is coded of the baby. So it didn't sound like it was
Right, so what exactly does that mean? So that means that because
the baby's not fully alive at all.
So I mean, even though this would be much closer to Reb Chaim's work.
He said it.
Right.
Brian wrote it and I wrote
similar. Right. So when I first heard this Ramosha many years ago, so it was presented like Ramosha was saying a different Varna, a different twist from Chaim. You're right. If you say over what I'm saying, whether this was Ramosha's Kavanah or not, I think one could, so maybe we won't pin what I'm saying on Ramosha. But Lefinia's Daiti, one could go down the root of Ramosha and say that it's an Enyo de Miro de Visvi, but by an Uber, it's clear Miro de Visvi. So again, you're right. Maybe Ramosha himself didn't mean to say that. We're going to present it as an alternate to Ramosha. Okay, good. Zolzai. Yeah.
Was Ramosha discussing this in the context of the Siamese twins? Was that the Shaila that he was talking about?
Was this the one? I don't remember. Was that true for written then? I don't remember.
Where one was like killing the other?
Yeah. I don't remember. I'm not sure it makes much of a difference, Lahalocha, whether you put Reb Chaim's spin on it or Reb Moshe's spin on it, or whether they're ultimately saying the same thing. They're both defending the Rambam. And if you really take the Rambam Shita, Acharei Kol Yisrael, the Rambam saying this Ratzicha here. I don't think there's any other way to get around that. So at the end of the day, you need the heter of Reidev in order to be matir an abortion, according to the Rambam.
So if the baby's born, why is that not
Reidev? Well, once the baby's born, so then it's an independent, that's like Reuven and Shimon, then the two different entities. The baby's no longer dependent on the mother. The baby owes a karsa toif to the mother. No, but it's over. The baby doesn't need the mother anymore. The baby's breathing on its own. The baby's born already. So, Kozman, the baby's still totally in biologically in the mother. So then it's hard to say that the mother's being rode if the baby. So, Hayatzim and Advarim, I think no matter how you say Pshat in the Rambam, whether or not you think that abortion is murder, at the end of the day, is a machlokes Rashi in the Rambam. That's the bottom line. According to Rashi, it doesn't seem to be murder. According to the Rambam, it seems to be murder. Yeah, I'm sorry, yeah. Right, so some people asked me that yesterday about it. Zubi Yachima even play a role here? I don't know. I didn't see. Anyone see Mishainim that linked the two?
The Rush.
Yeah. So what's the Lush of Rush again? Right. So the question is, did the Rush mean the halachic? I'm not sure if the Rush meant the halachic. What? Yes, I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not sure whether there's any real connection between the two. I don't know. So, Lamaisa Yetzibin Advarim, it would appear that the fundamental question remains the same. No matter what you say, Pshah and the Rambam, Zuk Tezor, at the end of the day, the fundamental question is, are you willing to go down the route of Rashi, that this is not Ratzicha, or down the route of the Rambam? So, my nafkamin l'dina, at the end of the day, everybody agrees that if the mother's life is in danger, you're allowed to kill the baby. And that's a Mishnah. You can't argue with the Mishnah. So, my nafkamin. And the Pasha's advarim is that everybody agrees that stam to perform abortions to stam indiscriminately. So Mustama, that's also. How do we know that's also? So that was a Tosfos. Tosfos Sanhedrin told us that because Mika Midi, the Gemara says that it's inconceivable that something should be also for goyim and be a green light for Jews. So Tosfos says you're right. It's not a green light for Jews. It's also for Jews. It's just a lower level of Isser. So at the end of the day, it's also, and at the end of the day, it's mutter to save the mother's life. So my nafkamina. So the chayda nafkamina would be a very, very serious nafkamina, special nafkamina as follows. What if you have other situations where we have very, very pressing needs to perform an abortion, but I can't call it risk to the mother's life? I cannot say the mother's life is in danger. I could say that there are a lot of other things that are quote-unquote in danger, a lot of other very, very otherwise well-justified reasons to perform an abortion, but I cannot label it as pikuach nefesh of the mother per se. Could we even open up the discussion or not? So if you hold that the isser of abortion is ritzicha, the discussion doesn't even get off the ground. You can't even discuss what you're talking about. It's ritzicha, finish that discussion. The only matter of ritzicha is reidev. And if it's not a reidev, the mother's life is not in danger. You have 15,000 other very, very important considerations. That's totally irrelevant. When you talk about ritzicha, the game's over. So that was the approach that Ramosha took. And that's why when Ramosha was presented with different shailas about abortion, can we be matter abortion for reason X, Y, and Z? There wasn't even Eilal Adas to discuss it. Because Ramosha held that the Ikra did is like the Rambam. Ramosha held, and Ramosha even claims that Rashi agreed to the Rambam. That part I didn't understand. But Ramosha was for sure going to be with the Rambam. And consistently, if you hold like the Rambam, then we cannot even open up the discussion about abortion. However, what if you hold like Rashi? And Rashi wasn't a Rashi. Ramban, remember, had a little like Rashi. There are Rishayim, a lot of Rishayim who seem to say, who invoke that imagery of Lav Nefesh. But even those Rishayim presumably have to concede that there's some kind of Issa going on. But what is that Issa? And is that Issa sometimes able to be circumvented? So let's think of what that Issa may be. What possible Issa could there be? So I said under my breath a couple of days, when we first started the Sugya, two very, very quickly Surim. Some may argue that abortion is no worse than chavala. The Gemara says in the 8th Perek of Baba Kama, you're not allowed to be chavala b'atzmacha. You're not allowed to stam destroy your body. You're not allowed to wound yourself, not cause blood. Just stam for no reason. That's chavala. That's an issa gom. That's an issa deraisa. So that's one possibility, that the baby, you want to call it ubi yerachim, whatever you want to call it, be the chavala nafka. So again, I'm not minimizing that issa of chavala, but ritzicha it's not. Chavala it is. Perhaps one wants to suggest that maybe there's another issur going on here. It's almost like an extended issur. It's almost like a kavachemir issur of otzah zera, otzah zera of atol hashchas zera. That's a whole sugi masech bek masech nita. So that's a very, very serious issur. That's an issur that can be violated in many, many different ways. Hashchas zera, otzah zera of atol, issues of birth control, touching that, other things. So maybe one can argue, it's almost a kavra madach, atzor zel atala. What's wrong with atzor zel atala? Because you're preventing, so to speak, quote-unquote, potential life. Here you're not just destroying a zera that could theoretically, down the line, have turned into a baby. Here you're destroying a baby in utero. Maybe it's already otot, almost born. So some achronim have that kind of a lashon. Maybe this is almost like an extension of the yitzah of hashchas zera. Whichever isser you call this, one could argue as follows. These two isurim are nitan to be mutter if there's a significant kind of a tzorich. We're not getting into the details, what each case, what kind of degree of tzorich you need. Because these isurim, let's say chavala is also shalol tzorich. If there's a tzorich, then chavala is mutter. Haraya chavala is mutter l'tzorich, l'tzorich haguf, let's say. So we're matir chavala l'tzorich guf ha'adam. If, let's say, a person wants to get their blood drawn because they want to find out what the cholesterol count is. They want to go get their annual physical. So they're drawing blood. Chavala, it's an issa gomer. Chavala, what are you talking about? It's a chavala. That's chavala tzorch of Adam. That's the tikkun. Chavala is also when it's derech hashchasa. Chavala is also when it's derech batola, when it's time for wanton destruction, one's body, one's not allowed to do. But if you're doing it for very real, positive, constructive purposes, that's not called chavala. And there was a machlokes apoiskim about what if it's not even for medical purposes? What if it's simply for cosmetic purposes? Can a person undergo a surgery for cosmetic purposes? So chaval liyipuya adam. It's also not so posher, but a lot of people make on that also. So if I'm not mistaken, I think a lot of women have earrings. And I think when you get your ears pierced, I think there's a little bit of chaval there also. So I think that people are generally mekil, that that's assumed to be legitimate tzrachim, that's not called destructive chavala, and therefore it would probably going to be mutter. So there are grounds when we're discussing the issue of chavala to discuss other tzrachim that could potentially circumvent chavala. When it comes to Hatzah Zera Levatala, so Hatzah Zera Levatala, also that phrase Levatala, that's the phrase. Sometimes it's not Levatala. Sometimes, and again, we're not going to learn the sugi right now, there may be medical reasons, there may be other kinds of reasons, fertility reasons, there may be other reasons why acts that would otherwise constitute Hatzah Zera would potentially be permissible in Halacha. If that's the case, then if this Isser is some kind of a related to Hatzah Zera Levatala, maybe one could discuss it if there's some kind of a potentially pressing halachic need, without getting into every single detail as to what the pressing halachic need is. So again, if you go down the route of the Rambam, and which Ramesh's thought was the Ikra Din, that the discussion doesn't even get off to the ground, so then I don't want to hear any discussion about abortion, short of Pekuach Nefesh of the mother. But if you're willing to go down the route, that there's some other kind of a lower level Isser here, not Ritzicha Mamesh, and those kinds of isurim, whatever they are, may be nitan to be permissible under extenuating kinds of circumstances, then we can begin to discuss abortions out of the context of just pure danger to the mother's life. So this was a raging machlokes, a major, major machlokes between Rav Moshe, not surprising to Rav Moshe, and others. And the Baal Plukt of Rav Moshe back in the heyday was the Tzitz Eliezer. Tzitz Eliezer was a Waldenberg. was an Odom Gadol Amiyad, was a great posek in Eretz Yisrael. He was a posek for Shaarei Tzedek Hospital. He wrote many tshuvas. After in later years, so then Rav Neuvit became the posek, the Shabbos Kachosa became the posek, and then later years now Rosh Weiss became the posek for Shaarei Tzedek Hospital. But in the back, many two tkufas ago, so the Tzitz Eliezer Voldemort was the posek for Shaarei Tzedek, and he wrote many tshuvas, Shabbos and tshuvas Tzitz Eliezer, and a good portion of the tshuvas are medical related issues. Not a great surprise, he was possible the Shabbos and Shaarei Tzedek, so obviously he was very, very much in sync with the medical issues in Halacha. So he wrote a tshuva, and he wrote multiple tshuvas, basically presenting the view of Rashi that we're not really dealing with Ritzicha here, we're dealing with other potentially very, very serious Isurim, but they're not Ritzicha Mamish. And if they're not Ritzicha Mamish, then there may be certain grounds to permit abortions. What would those grounds be? So again, one should not at all take the attitude, oh yeah, well great, it's not Ritzicha, therefore it's Heter Gomer. Far from being Heter Gomer. The Mishnah never talks about abortion short of these crazy cases. So Tzitz Eliezer entertained the following possibilities. Sometimes you have Rachmana Litzlan situation where we know in advance that this fetus has some very, very serious medical condition. So the original shaila this was discussed about was the issue of Tay-Sachs. So Tay-Sachs was something that was a burning issue in my day still, when I was younger. It was basically, it's a genetic disease that is much higher found in Ashkenazi Jews. So I think the numbers are something around one every 25 to 30 Ashkenazi Jews is a potential carrier for Tay-Sachs. Those who know the basic ABCs, you remember your Gregor Mendel P's and genetics experiments. So basically, the Tay-Sachs gene was a recessive gene. So you only get it if you have both of those genes. So you could actually have a lot of people walking around who are carrying one of those potential genes for Tay-Sachs. And they're perfectly healthy. Absolutely nothing happens to them. They're perfectly fine. You couldn't tell. If you didn't test their genes, you would never ever know that they have it. And you could have a young man who's walking around with this, with this gene in his back pocket, and you have a young lady who's walking around with this gene in her back pocket. So if neither one of them, if they don't marry each other, so then everyone's going to be shown by, so everyone's going to be perfectly healthy. But if they do marry each other, so then the numbers start to work against you. Because if they do marry each other, then there's a 1 in 4 chance that the two genes are going to match up. And if both genes combine together in the child, that means that child's going to develop this disease of Tay-Sachs. So if you just do the math, if let's say for approximately 1 of 30 people in Ashkenazi community, in the non-Jewish community, the numbers are much, 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 much higher in terms of 1 in a couple hundred of having it. It was a mutation in a gene that when you inmarry a lot, and people you have these smaller population pools, like you had an Ashkenazi jury, so then that's why the numbers get so much more serious. So if you just do the math, that means if you have 1 of 30 people is carrying this gene, so the odds that the two people are going to marry each other are what? We need some math here, statistics as well. What are the odds? Right, 1 in 900. Okay, there's a 1 in 900 chance that two carriers are going to marry each other, and there's a 1 in 4 chance that any baby that's going to be born is going to have this disease. That means, in theory, every time you're standing under a chuppah and watching a marriage, there's a 1 in 3,600 chance that there may be a Tay-Sachs baby born. Did I just do math right? Okay? So you may think, oh, come on, what's the big deal? It's so unlikely, 1 in 3,600. What's the big deal? What's the big deal about Tay-Sachs? Oh, come on, let's learn. So anyone who learned anything about Tay-Sachs, again, it's not even on the radar screen. Nobody even talks about it today. But 30, 40 years ago, it was a very, very hot topic. What's wrong with it? It's a gefährlich disease that a child cannot survive. They say a baby gets first is born looking normal, and then as the baby begins to develop, so it's a neurological disease that begins to kick in when the baby is, I think, even before 1. I don't remember all the details, and the child, it cannot be survived. It's fatal. The child cannot survive past the age of 4 or so, and the baby, deteriorates, can't move, can't do it, becomes blind. It's gefährlich. Those who've seen it, so it's one of the terrible machala. And there's no cure. There's no cure for them. The only way to avoid it is to avoid it in the first place. So when this shaila originally came to the Tzitz Eliezer, can you abort a baby that was already, they were able to tell through testing, whatever, amnio fluid, so they were able to already tell that this mother is carrying a Tay-Sachs baby. What do you do? So gefährlich, what do you do? So are you allowed to abort this child or not? So the Tzitz Eliezer held that yes, We held that the tzarech here of avoiding this child being born, the degree of physical suffering that this child is going to have and the psychological suffering that the parents are going to have, that's considered to be enough of a tzarech, and since we're not dealing with the tzarech anyway, so therefore it's permitted to abort such a child. And Rav Moshe disagreed. Rav Moshe said, Rav Moshe's heart went out, and Rav Moshe was the most sensitive and compassionate of all people, unbelievable compassion in all those who knew Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe said, what do you want? It's a chrtzicha, it's chrtzicha, it's chrtzicha. What are you going to do? I can't do anything about it. So that was the original machlokes. Then this machlokes has spilled over the years to other things. Tay-Sachs was a hot issue then, but there are other kind of defects that were able to be picked up in utero. Now, as standard care in pregnancy is there are so many sonograms that are done during the course of pregnancy, so many, many things are actually picked up along the way. And now the doctors say, listen, this fetus has condition X, Y, and Z. It's going to have terrible, terrible ramifications. It may not be the same as Tay-Sachs, but it's supposed to be terrible, terrible suffering, and there's really no hope. So what do you do? So the same story, according to Rav Moshe. So the din would be you can't do anything about it. And according to the Tzitz Eliezer, so one could defend the doing abortions, again, case by case. Not all the conditions are obviously equal to Tay-Sachs. Each case has to be evaluated, just how serious a condition it is. Yeah.
If you thought that abortion like Rashi wasn't Masicha, it was like Hotzah Zera, so then could you rely on Rabbi Utam that doesn't apply to women, but would that be a possible snippet of Kula? Like, okay.
I mean, again, the Hotzah Zera part is probably not really the... I don't think that was the popular... I mean, some Achronim throw it as a possibility. I'm not sure that was the more prevalent view. So it's because of this problem and because of the fact that there were many, many poskim who did not permit abortions, even under these most extenuating circumstances, this actually was caused the organization of Dor Yesharim. This was the impetus for the organization of Dor Yesharim already quite some time ago, that the goal was that instead of Nebuch having this woman becoming pregnant and having to deal with this, let's beat the problem before it comes. Let's solve the problem before it becomes a problem, and we will prevent those two people from standing on the chum from getting married together in the first place. Because if you can simply avoid that, so then we don't have to deal with the shav, we don't have to deal with the terrible ramifications of such a Tay-Sachs baby being born. So that was ultimately what brought about Dor Yesharim. If I'm not mistaken, I think the person who actually started Dor Yesharim had actually had Tay-Sachs children in his own family. So I think that was the personal impetus for this. And all the pre-screening and everything to test, to make sure that people are not carriers, so that was what started. Now again, the original thing was Tay-Sachs. Over the years, many, many other things, because there are many, many other diseases that are prevalent in the Ashkenazi community, so we're thrown into the mix also. So when people are strongly recommended they should get some, before they get married, they should get screened properly. There have been, since the days of Dor Yesharim, there have been more different kinds of screening that have taken place. Dor Yesharim, those who know the background, so Dor Yesharim was done, although it was in a phenomenal innovation in the Jewish community, and saved much, much, much heartache, and has reached the point that the last I heard of a Tay-Sachs case was already quite some time ago. But I think that Lamaisa, we've kind of almost pretty much eradicated. Anyone who's doing pre-screening beforehand has pretty much eradicated that. But other diseases have been added to the list as well. But one of the things of Dor Yesharim, where you can, again, you can discuss the pros and cons, but that's not the topic right now, but is that everything is secret. Namely, you never really find out whether you have anything. You don't know whether you everything is anonymous. Everything is you basically get a blood test when you're a teenager, and everyone's on this. All the results are stored somewhere in some database somewhere, and then when a young man, a young woman want to go out, so they give their numbers to they call into the database, and they'll tell you you're acceptable. You don't have anything to worry about. All these diseases that were tested for, you're clear. You're good to go. Now that doesn't mean that you don't have it. You could have that gene, but the person who you're being set up with doesn't have it, so therefore they tell you that you're okay. So there's a they set up in that way to avoid stigmas and shame and whatever. It's a good idea, bad idea, it's not relevant. That's the way the system works, Lamaisa. There have been other systems that have been put into place that are more open, that say that I want to know what I have. Tell me if I have gene playing, I want to know about it. So there are people who do testing that way. So there are other things, J-screens, other things, a lot of other things that have been put into place in the last couple of years. So again, this is not the purpose of the time and place to tell you you what to do. I'm just strongly recommending Be'at Hashem before you get married. So make sure that something appropriate is done. There are different cultural differences as to when this screening is done, when people check. You know, in certain circles, so this is before a couple meets, all of this has been taken care of long before. And in certain other circles, depending on your approach to dating in general, so sometimes couples will actually begin dating and before some of these important information has been cleared. So again, I'm not here to advocate what to do. You can talk to me later privately. But everyone should be aware that this whole institution, the Jewish community, all came about because of this hapala, because of the abortion issues. If you take a very, you know, approach to abortion, if you would hold that everything is okay, you can abort everything, so everyone can get married, because someday we'll get married, and when the woman goes for her first sonogram, we'll find out she's carrying a taste of baby, so we'll abort the baby, sure, we'll take that you know, lackadaisical attitude, and we're going to do abortions all the time. So, because we're trying not to do that, we're trying very, very hard to avoid that, and we're trying to avoid the shilas, trying to avoid any of these complications, so the whole screening system wasn't put into place in the Jewish community. Yeah.
According to the Rambam, then, the Uber has reached a point where it's now called a relief. That means it's probably in a certain stage of pregnancy. Meaning, with the Rambam, with the svara of being a Ruksaya, of killing the Uber, not be shy pre a certain point.
Yeah, so that's a very tricky thing. At what point would the Rambam concede that it's not Ritzich at any point? So that's the next part of what I was going to talk about. So there is a tshuva in Reb Chaim Hoizer, where again, Reb Chaim Hoizer wasn't talking about Tesach screening. Reb Chaim Hoizer writes that it's near lo loima, that even though it's possible, loima, that even if you hold that abortion is Ritzicha, but he says, yesh gvul b'dav, before 40 days, he can't believe it could be Ritzicha. Why? We didn't manage that in 40 days. That's the Gemara Maseches Nidah. The Gemara says that for purposes of Tumas Yoledes and Pidgin Aben and other areas of Halacha, that for the first 40 days, so the Gemara uses the phrase, it's Maya be'alma, that it's simply just a collection of fluid. I mean, it's not really a formed baby yet. The truth is that this actually corresponds to some degree to the science, to the anatomy, that the baby begins to take on the form of a little bit of a tzura of a human at that point. It means a little bit, you'd see a little demarcation of limbs, etc. So before 40 days, the Gemara says it's Maya B'Alma. So Reb Chaim Hoizer says that if it's Maya B'Alma, how can it be Ritzicha on Maya B'Alma? You're killing water, what are you killing? Amniotic fluid? It's nothing. It's just a group of cells. So that's not considered yet to be a nefesh, even according to the Shittas HaRambam. That's a suggestion that Reb Chaim Hoizer has. It was based on that suggestion that many Rabbonim were talking to the medical professionals and say, we have to figure out ways to test that maybe we can pick up some of these genetic defects before 40 days. So if you can pick it up before 40 days, it'll be so much less of a shayla according to the svara of Reb Chaim Hoizer. The problem is that's not always easy to do. That's easier said than done. That a lot of the tests that are done, the amniocentesis and the sonograms, that kind of stuff, which picks up these kind of defects in utero, just can't be done that early. Just practically, you can't get the information so early. So it's a nice idea. This 40-day thing's in theory be a nice idea, but I don't know whether the technology is there yet or not. You have to check. Probably have a check with your father. He'll know this kind of stuff better than anybody here. So if the best of my knowledge, I don't know how much really could be determined at that point.
Are there other cases where 40 days would make a difference?
Well, 40 days, I mean, there are other areas of halacha. 40 days does make a difference. Pidgin Aben makes a difference. Right. Oh, I mean, it's not a question of genetic things. Okay, good. Okay. So that's going to touch on the next thing. Okay, the next part I'm going to say. So when we think about abortion, so you kind of have that, that image of Nebuch, you know, the baby's already partially developed, or even in Lahava of Abdullah in America, so there are different trimesters, you know, different rules about the third trimester. Yeah, all kind of stories. But there is a question in halacha about very, very early on abortions. I mean, really, really early on abortions. Literally, immediately post-fertilization. So again, just a basic bio. So once the woman's egg is fertilized, so that, you can't have to call it a baby. I'm not even sure we call it an uber, whatever. It's an embryo. It's not even a fetus in biology. But it's already a fertilized egg, and it's already starting to split up, and one cell turns into two cells, into four cells, eight cells, and it's already, that begins, that's where we all came from. So the question is, within the view that Apollos uber is called Ritzicha, at what point does it start? So if you take the view of Reb Chaim Hoizer, it starts at 40 days, okay? But not everyone's agreed to that, Reb Chaim Hoizer. So if you think that even before 40 days is a cheshash of Ritzicha, when does Ritzicha start? Conception? That means mamish, the second that that egg is fertilized, to destroy that egg would be called an act of ritzicha, according to the Rambam. Is that true? So there are some real shailas that come about based on that. So there is a, and again, this is not the time or the venue or the place right now to discuss the birth control, but there is a method of, it's hard to call it birth control, it's what's colloquially called the morning after pill, which basically means that the couple had the relations in a way that they weren't using birth control, and now there's a concern that she may become pregnant, and what do you do now? So is there anything that can be done post having relations in order to, in a sense, prevent this baby from becoming this, if there was a fertilization, preventing the woman from becoming pregnant? So there is a certain pill that can be taken, and again, how much it works, it doesn't work, I'm not a doctor right now, but there is a pill out there that can be taken even afterwards. And the question is, what exactly does that pill do? So, besides all the other issues of birth control, which are not a whole nother sugya, does that pill destroy a fertilized egg? If that's the goal of that pill, to destroy an egg that was already fertilized, so one could raise a red flag about that kind of a pill. It means that kind of a pill may be much, much more harmful than just a regular birth control issue. Birth control has its own issues, but maybe this is even more serious than birth control, because here, again, according to Rashi, it's not Ritzicha. According to Chaim Hoizer, it's not Ritzicha. But if you take the Rambam, that there's no cutoff point, that the only cutoff point is fertilization, so then that could potentially be a problem in terms of Apollos Uber, which could be a very, very serious Shaila, according to the Shittas of Rambam. So it's, again, I don't know the intricacies of the biology here, but it's very possible that even according to the Rambam, this wouldn't pose a problem of Ritzicha at all, for one of two reasons. First of all, it could be that this pill actually prevents fertilization itself. Fertilization doesn't happen on the split second. In the minute that a couple's together, the egg doesn't get fertilized right away. It takes a little bit of time for that to happen. So it's very possible that biologically, the pill that's taken a few hours later may prevent the fertilization in the first place. And even if technically, biologically, there may have been an egg that was fertilized, one could argue that it's mamish and nothing at that point. And even according to the Nadir of Chaim Hozer people, even people are not willing to say that 40 days is the cutoff point, but, what, 3 minutes? Egg was fertilized 30 seconds ago. It never became anything. It's bekoshi doing anything. It's not doing anything right now. It's not even called an embryo yet. Who remembers the biological term? What's it called at that point? Remembers? It's not even an embryo. Zygote, right? That's what I thought. Okay, it's a zygote. It's not even an embryo. So that first couple of breakups of cells, maybe one could argue that the Torah is not misyaches. That's happening literally in the you can't even measure that. There's no way to see that. You can't see it on an ultrasound. You can't see it. No one knows about it. No one cares about it. It's not even. You can't even call that a nefesh. According to the Rambam, even that's for sure not considered to be a nefesh. So that would be a shaila. That shaila could also be part of as to where exactly draw the line in terms of abortion within Shittas Rambam. So this is part of an issue that was also discussed by the Gedolei HaPoskim already some time ago, related to a certain kind of a birth control. There's a certain kind of a birth control that's used that at one time there was some in the medical field were viewing it as if it's the hormones that it's releasing are destroying a pre-existing fertilized egg already. There was a machlokes between the doctors, someone tining that this particular method of birth control was preventing fertilization, and someone tining that fertilization was happening and that was breaking up the pre-fertilized egg. So it gets very, very tricky. You know, again, it's a nuance in medicine, but the nuance may be important in halacha. So I remember when this was being discussed by Gedolei HaPoskim, so there was a svara that was suggested that even aniach that the egg is already fertilized, it's still, this is so early on in the process that even if you don't accept Reb Chaim Hoizer, to call this Ritzicha is already way, way, way too much to call this Ritzicha. So I think that the general consensus, at least many, many poskim is that a lot of these kinds of shilas, which are so, so, so early on, and so there's a little fake is over here. That we're not even sure we followed the Rambam in the first place. Since we also followed the Rashi. And even according to the Rambam, 40 days may be the cutoff point. And even if you have 40 days, not the cutoff point, but maybe these early stages are so way early that we don't have to be concerned with them. So again, a lot of these things are very, very real shailas lemaisa that all have their beginnings in the Machlekes Rashi and the Rambam. So my Yotz Ben Advarim is that we seem to have pretty clear Machlekes Rashi and the Rambam about what a take on abortion is. It seems to be machlokes the Gedalia Pasuk and Ramesh and Tzitzel Yehaz, what the bottom line is in this whole story. And even within the Shittas of Rambam, we're not quite sure where you draw the line in terms of the development of this baby. At what point, even according to the Rambam, we can say that it hasn't quite crossed the threshold of being a shayla of Ratzicha. And then you have of course the critical issue. If you hold that abortion is ritzicha, then there's nothing to discuss any shailas. If you hold that abortion is not ritzicha, then you can begin to discuss certain kinds of very, very extenuating circumstances. Would they fall into being a problem or not?
If you go with the Rambam, it is like the ritzicha, so after 40 days, no matter what, no good.
So according to, if you really hold like the Rambam, like Ramosha, after 40 days, I don't think there's anything to negotiate unless there's mamsa comes to fashas for the mother. And these kinds of things are terrible for the mother, terrible for the parents. You know, to say that they're pikuach nefesh for the mother, unless the mother has some kind of a, you know, psychiatric condition that is going to be so thrown off by this that her life may become in danger. That's a very, very tricky call. How much is that called the right if? Not called the right if? I don't know. That's a very, very tricky situation. Okay? All right. So what was that goal today? We're supposed to accomplish four things. So we accomplished two of them. And I think what we'll try to do is we'll skip the four yamsa.
Can you argue that the pill is also, instead of killing actively, it's preventing the continued life of the Ramah, about stopping the beating of the hammer that keeps the blood going to the pill, and prevents the embryo from developing?
No, but the problem is it may do more than that. Again, I don't know the intricacies of the medicine, but the pill may destroy the egg. Not just, it may mamish be something that's inserted into the mother's body that's going to destroy this egg. I don't know. I'm not sure. So the question is, would those be grounds for Tzitzel Yezer? Maybe for Tzitzel Yezer, maybe we could discuss. According to Ramosha, it would be a moot.
Is that like a common view?
What's the row view? The row view. We're gonna have to turn off the recording for a second. For this one. All right. Okay, I thought we'd just give a little bit of chumash, a little bit of service. Put it on again. Yes.